It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We have lots to talk about. Unfortunately, we have a great panel. Andy Iannocco joins us. Renee Ritchie's got the day off, but don't worry. Jim Dalrymple and Aaron Hillegass are here from Big Nerd Ranch. We'll talk about the latest Apple news, what's happening with the car, what's happening with the MacBook Pro. It's all ahead. Apple's in the news. And Mac Break Weekly's got it next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 529, recorded Tuesday, October 18th, 2016. Sentient Mechanical Octopus. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a beautiful website. Set your business, portfolio, blog, or wedding apart at Squarespace. Enter the offer code MacBreak to get 10% off. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. And by Trunk Club. Get clothes that fit and look great without ever stepping into a store again. Trunk Club will help you create the wardrobe you've always dreamed of with your own personal stylist. Go to trunkclub.com/MacBreak and join Trunk Club today. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we get together and talk about the latest news from Apple. Renee Ritchie, a sudden scratch today due to a groin injury. So, no, I shouldn't say that. That's probably not what he would like me to say. That's Jim Dalrymple howling away. Hey, Jim, great to see you.
How you doing, Lou?
From the Loop, loopinsight.com. Great to see the beard and a haircut. Look at that. Looking sharp. Yeah. That's a good-looking haircut. I like it. I like it. If you didn't have the beard, I'd think you were in the military.
Actually, I could do that. I'd want to be in special forces, though, yeah. But I couldn't handle that training.
You look like a special forces kind of guy. Also, with us, the cowboy Aaron Hillegass from BigNerdRanch.com. Great to see you, Aaron.
Great to see you, Leo.
Thanks for joining us. And last time you were on, you didn't have the hat, so I'm glad you.
Yeah, bad branding. I got a slap on the wrist from the marketing people. So I have the hat now permanently. Actually,
you can't go anywhere without the hat. No. It seemed like a good idea 20 years ago when you started the company.
I would have picked something smaller if I were doing it again. Some sort of a beret or a yarmulke.
A fez. I picked fez. Fez, you know,
something
fabulous.
Something easy to travel with.
Yeah, exactly. It rolls up everything. Also with us, Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Hey, Andy. Hello.
Great to see you again.
Always good to see you guys. Always good to see special guests. Always good to see Jim.
Unbranded cap. Unbranded cap today, and that's because Andy is testing an unbranded phone that he can't tell anybody about.
No, this is the. It's mostly because I should actually write up what the ladder of respectability is as you get older, how you have to adjust your wardrobe. I believe that I've transitioned into the age where I can still wear a baseball cap, but it has to be like unlogoed or a really expensive designer logo. If it really is just my late night with the David Letterman cap from 1987, I look like I've been shopping out of the other side of people's sofas.
Did you see the article about Letterman? He has to.
That's great.
Nice.
You look like the next iteration of the Doctor. That is good. That is, I like that.
And I have, this is actually the Twit. What do they call this? I can't remember the name of it. You were the first to test it, and they even made an enamel pin to hold the tassel.
Chapeau, I think.
Chapeau, something like that. Yeah.
They call it something French.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Look at that. I actually like this look. I'm going to stick with it.
With a tie and the jacket, you look like, from a distance, before people can identify the logo, you might be a visiting dignitary. if a cop saw you parking illegally, they wouldn't rush to ticket you. They would wonder, sort of diplomatic logo? Yeah. Will I get in trouble for ticketing this guy?
Is he from Chad? Where is he from? It looks like. So now we've got the cap. The chapeau, the beard, and the hat on the show today. It's like a morning zoo for you. Tim Cook Vice President Cook. I think there was a confusion, and Hillary Clinton picked Tim Kaine, but apparently Tim Cook was on the list of, what is it, 40 vice presidential candidates? I hope Sia wasn't on that list. I don't think...
Yeah. I think that explains why he would not have accepted. Do you want to spend all your day hanging out with incredibly gifted creative types like Sia, or do you want to spend the day hanging out with politicians?
Ooh. You know, I once served on a committee for the city of Petaluma, the tech committee, briefly. And it was so, and this is, I'm glad government should not move fast. I think we've realized there's a benefit to government being highly deliberative, maybe even gridlocked, because a fast moving government's scary. But this was, I couldn't take it. I mean, I really understand why, you know, it's a certain type of person that you have to be pretty dedicated to public service to sit in those long meetings, and then you have to listen to people who don't know what they're talking about. And oh, I'd much rather do this. I like talking to people who know what they're talking about.
I guess I'll leave.
No, Jim, stay. You're the one. You're the one I'm talking about. I guess this list is just this is probably a PR stunt more than anything else. There's a Bill and Melinda Gates are on it. I don't think a couple can serve as vice president. And how embarrassing if they picked one and not the other. So both were on the list. That was one of those things probably intended to be leaked that then everybody's happy. Oh, yeah, I was considered. Cook is big into AR these days. In an interview published on Thursday. In fact, this has lent some credence to the idea that maybe the iPhone 8 is particularly all about AR. And he talked to BuzzFeed News and said the company is bullish on AR. There's no substitute for human contact, Cook said, and so you want the technology to encourage that. Is it too soon to start talking about the iPhone 8 and too soon to think about whether that might have an AR component?
I think AR is going to be huge. So at Big Nerd Ranch, we've already done a couple of proofs of concepts for like a museum. And the effect has been great. It can really augment learning. And, you know, we're all about the learning. And I think it's very exciting that with AR, you take your phone out into the world instead of with VR, where you lock yourself in a dark closet and play with your Vive. It's neat to go out and see the kids with the Pokemon Go running around the neighborhood. I think it is a life-affirming technology.
Yeah.
But it's good. It depends on what kind of version of AR you want to support. Pokemon Go is definitely what the technology can handle right now. What we imagine is having an augmented reality where I don't have to, you know, I don't have to walk around like this in any way, shape, or form. Because if you think it's distracting having a Google Glass on you, imagine having to look at someone who is kind of like doing this all the time as they're walking around.
Yeah.
I really think that AR and VR, it really is almost on the same sort of transient line as self-driving cars, autonomous vehicles, where you can get a really good demo together. You can get a lot of really obvious ways in which it would be cool, but then actually translating it to something you can actually make and sell and that people actually want to use, that's the 5% of the problem that's going to take you 300% of your resources to solve.
Do you think some of this comes from the fact that they've built now a phone that has basically supercomputing capabilities? And yet, you know, it's just mostly playing Pokemon Go or sending messages.
We did a lot of crazy things when technology first came. I mean, you know, having Mac Paint or, you know, things like that where you draw little little things and you look what that's turned into.
AR Apple's 21st century fat bits?
Well, I think. You know, like Aaron said, when you look at AR and the things that are possible, maybe not right now, but look ahead and see what could be possible. That's going to be a pretty exciting thing. And it's in the real world. I mean, virtual reality, you know, you lock yourself in a virtual world and you're basically by yourself. Yeah. I think AR is most certainly the future.
Yeah. AR is about a whole lot more than gaming. VR, I mean, I guess could VR be, but AR really is about user as a new user interface. And I think it makes sense for Apple to think about it. BuzzFeed lists a bunch of moves over the last few years by Apple. In 2013, they bought PrimeSense. That was the Israeli company that did the Microsoft Kinect. In May 2015, it bought a German augmented reality firm, Matteo. A few months later, FaceShift. That's the company that did the real-time motion capture and used in Star Wars. This year, VR scientist Yuri Petrov was poached from Oculus. Magic Leap's Zeyu Li. Magic Leap's the most interesting AR, kind of independent AR play right now, although Google has a fairly large stake in it. Doug Bowman, the director of the Center for Human-Computer Interaction at Virginia Tech, he was on the Virginia Tech Cube, a VR research space. And then, of course, there are lots of patents, although I think I've never really trusted patents as a way of seeing where Apple might be going. They just patent everything, as does everybody, if they're smart.
But I think you have a really interesting point about the idea that Apple needs to do things that will take advantage of the supercomputer. I mean, I have my iPhone 4, right?
what is that little thing?
This has just been declared obsolete. But it had a Retina display. Right. It had a front-facing camera. It had a great little CPU. As long as we're not doing supercomputer-type stuff, this is pretty much sufficient for the task. And so Apple, to get back into growth mode, really needs to find ways where it can play to its strengths.
Right.
And AR is a natural thing to pursue.
Yeah.
I think the question, though, is how long would it take Apple to develop AR to the point where it is one of those big selling points? And how we all know that Apple will not release something until they can actually do something with it.
Yeah.
And they've skipped technologies altogether. I think that's a big question now. Where are they and how long will it be?
In fact, Apple rarely, if ever, is the first to market with a new technology, right? So
rarely ever.
Yeah, and the only really strong AR player right now with a product in the marketplace is Microsoft, and its HoloLens, which is $3,000, is a development version.
Well, not quite. Remember that Google has a AR translation of any sign that you're looking at, any language that you're sitting in front of. When people think about AR, they think too much about how we're going to put Pokemon on the street where you can actually see them. Gaming and these really, really amazing reality-twisting experiences. What people really want is an AR where I'm how many times when you're trying to navigate a city do you, of course, you stop, hopefully not in the middle of the street, you take out the phone to verify here's where I am on the map and here's what the direction I'm thinking I'm facing. What you really want is to, at that point, hold up your phone and move it around until you see a big arrow pointing not just at a building but at a street between two buildings and disappearing between two buildings saying, this way, moron, this is where you want to go. Similarly, you want an AR app that can take you down when you're just shopping for food, and you've told it what your meal plan, let's say, is for the next week, or if it's Google, it already kind of knows the sort of stuff you're interested in. And once again, instead of lifting up your phone and checking a pricing list, you simply hold it up and it will just simply, as you move it, it's just putting little halos around things that you actually need, and also pointing out that, well, you normally get this kind of bread, but if you look at this bread, which I put a green marching arrow circle around, this one has the same nutritional value, but it's actually 20 cents a loaf cheaper than this. So that's the sort of stuff that will really get people to start using these things and stop thinking of it as a way of just putting something weird on your face to see gnomes that aren't there. The difficulty, though, for Apple is that they'll have to put up a big infrastructure in order to make that happen. They can't just simply march on the stage, praise about this incredible piece of hardware they put in that makes the augmented reality possible, how fast it refreshes the frame rate. They're going to need a network that can feed the phone all kinds of information, that's going to feed upon information that the user contributes. And finally, I think Apple has to allow developers to show Apple where the awesome is in augmented reality. So they can't do this thing where we're going to we've added AR features to Apple Maps. We're not going to open the APIs for a couple of years. Then when we do, we'll let you do – we have two use cases that we will let you do an AR presence inside the mapping app. They need to have a sort of Wild West thing where without compromising the safety or security of the device or the user, be able to say, look, we're going to let you have access to a 3D sense of awareness of where this phone is. And we're going to give you APIs that will let you overlay into live video and basically feed back into 3D data that we're giving you from these two different cameras that we've got in the iPhone 7, iPhone 7 Plus. Please build something for us. And then if it's really awesome, we will put out our own product to put you out of business. If it's super awesome, we'll hire you.
Aaron, you're a developer. What do developers think of this? Do they see this as an opportunity?
So it's important to remember that a lot of the development that happens is not actually for consumers. So what we'll be looking for is opportunities for the enterprise. So if you'll remember when you were clawing your way up the org chart at the McDonald's, right, as you started at the cash register and then you're ready to become a fry cook.
And I did claw too, man. I had to just knock out the competition.
Well, it'd be nice to be able to just give you a set of goggles and say, here is the frying guide on augmented reality training in the real world without having you go off into a room by yourself, which is sort of how the VR people see it should be, is you should be taken away and locked in a closet.
It's not much better, frankly, in VR. I mean, VR, certainly as it stands now, we have very rudimentary ways of interacting with the VR space, you know, these little controllers and things. And it's true, a company like McDonald's, in fact, I would imagine any company these days that hires a lot of people, especially younger people who are not trained, has an extensive training program. Even then, 40 years ago, you'd go down in the break room and watch videos, with the Hamburglar and Ronald showing you how to flip a burger. And there were lots of, training manuals, of course, nicely coated to keep the grease off. So there was training is a big issue for these companies. Yeah, AR, as opposed to VR, might be a really good fit for
I was thinking a little bit about when we used to have a turntable. You'd make a whole thing of listening to your music. Like you'd put the record on and you would sit and you would listen to it and you wouldn't do other stuff. And then the Walkman came along and it became music was just something you put in your ears while you were doing other things. And I wonder in some sense that idea of VR is more like the first one where you're like, okay, now I'm going to play this game and it's going to be immersive. And then AR is a little more like, well, this is just going to be an addition to my life. I don't have to stop everything. And I can see attractive features about both. I know gamers must be frustrated about casual gaming, that a lot of the gaming dollars are going into games that are not as immersive. And maybe VR is a return to this. But AR, I think, more like a Walkman.
So, Aaron, how long do you see AR coming to consumers after it goes to enterprise?
I think consumers are going to drive a lot of it. As we've seen, the gamers are always pushing the technology pretty hard. Forward-thinking organizations will start doing AR. They're already doing it. As I said, we have done proof of concepts for museums, and they're very excited about this idea of being able to annotate the exhibits in new ways. So I think that pretty quickly, I actually think consumers will lead it in a very easy way.
With gaming,
and
probably, right?
When the enterprise comes, that's when we'll get really fascinating SDKs where developers will be able to very easily annotate reality.
I could see it
looking at years, though.
Years.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Well, first of all, we need hardware, right? I mean, even Microsoft's HoloLens is primitive, partly because you have to wear the entire computer on your head. So battery life's an issue, power's an issue. And you need heaps of both to really make this functional. And nobody wants to wear a tether, although that's how VR works in most cases right now. Well, would Apple so this is the question Robert Scoble posted a couple of days ago on Facebook. I have heard from a reliable source the next phone, the iPhone, will be a clear piece of glass with a control panel at the bottom. And that's for AR purposes. You know, you'll be looking through the phone at things. I don't know how credible that is, but do you anticipate hardware from Apple? And if you do, would it be separate from the iPhone? Would they be looking at something else, a headset or something else?
I think it'd be more like the watch where it complemented the phone.
Yeah, a sidecar.
Yeah.
Jim, what do you hear? Have you heard anything about the iPhone 8 that's credible at all?
Nothing that's credible.
It's too early, right?
Yeah. I mean, there. It's amazing that I think the day of or the day after the iPhone 7 was announced, we already had iPhone 8 things coming.
And, I know.
I blame you bloggers.
You just need constant material, don't you? Although, I mean, obviously, somewhere in a Johnny Ive lab, there are prototypes farther than that, probably. I mean, we're only a year off.
Yeah, they're even farther ahead than that. Yeah. So,
what is the cycle for a new, like, if you did a redesign, how long ahead of that did they start? 3 years?
Sure. I mean, they have prototypes of different things, and I mean, they have to wait until technology is available to do the things that they want to do, and then they start by removing headphone jacks and that could be something that they're looking at for a phone that's two years away. We need some space here to do this. By that time, batteries will be smaller, and we can transition and put this new technology in, maybe for augmented reality, or to be able to connect to a separate device for augmented reality. So the plans are always moving forward to what's coming up in a couple of years or more.
Yeah.
Well, really, you don't necessarily have to even have extra hardware in order to do AR. Again, I really do think that the sweet spot is really these sort of experiences right here.
You got a camera, you got a screen, that's all you need.
Exactly. And all you need to do is have a CPU and a GPU. They're fast enough that it can absolutely keep up with the motion of the camera and the motion of your hand and keep updating things. Because, again, it's even hard to get people to spend $100 for like a Samsung Gear VR, or even like a $80 the new cloth Google cloth board.
Because they're afraid it'll burn their house down. So
is it sensible
to get the Trump look?
Are we putting too much pressure on Apple by saying, "Oh, the 10th anniversary iPhone. This better be really innovative." It's hard to innovate these days. Apple and everybody else is showing that.
I don't think Apple cares.
You don't think Apple cares? Go ahead, Jim.
No, I don't think that they care about that.
In other words, we make a lot
of
noise, but they're completely capable of saying, "Oh, just ignore that."
Yeah. I think they've done that for years. Yeah. They release things when they're ready. They don't bow to pressure on where to open stores, what kind of products to release. They release things when they feel that they're ready.
I wonder how Apple does that. Ideally, you would insulate your engineers and in fact, in general, employees from this constant background. And Apple, of all the companies, Apple faces the most, because people are really love Apple and they really all feel like stakeholders. Gil Emilio said this. He said, "I thought I was running a company. I had no idea I was running a cult." But that's good. That's one of the things we like about Apple.
I think one of the challenges there is for everyone to think like a stakeholder, but not think like a shareholder. So I remember actually when Next was bought by Steve and I was there, Steve got up and made a big presentation about don't watch the stock price, that you shouldn't evaluate how the company is doing based on what your price to earnings ratio is.
Right. Do you think Apple says don't read the blogs, don't read the reviews?
I think they say don't take it seriously.
Yeah.
That you know more about what's going on in this company than they do.
It's a balance, because you want to know what people think. Mm-hmm. Any entertainer, any performer knows that on the one hand, they want to read reviews to get feedback. But on the other hand, the reviews can devastate you. And a number of famous actors never read reviews, and then many more do.
Yeah.
Apple's in the same boat.
I think there's an analog between, you also hear about some actors do not want to watch the dailies,
right?
And some they're the first people, like when their dailies to be seen. There are some directors who absolutely think that previews with the audiences that hand in scorecards are the absolute bane of their existence, whereas others count on them. It depends on really on your personality as a creator. I don't think either side is necessarily right or wrong. Apple has the ability, cushioned by their great success, to simply say that we know what we're doing. We can make exactly the devices that we want to make, and we're not going to do anything foolish that's going to be just something that three of us think is a good idea. It's going to be something that we think has real legs and has a real role to play in the future. Other companies like Google, they're perfectly happy to say, we're going to send out something that is not quite there yet, but it shows you what we're thinking, and you can give us feedback. Either deliberately by actually sending us feedback, or by simply versus the fact that we've wired up these apps to tell us what buttons are you hitting first, what features are you using, what features are you not using. So that both approaches can get you to a really great product at a really, really reliable clip. I think that if there's one disadvantage, it's that you can see the movement. You can see the forward movement in a Google product faster than you can see the forward movement in an Apple product. Apple product is like those, like the weeping angels in Doctor Who, where it's only when you close your eyes and you open them and then suddenly they've moved. It's not where you see a gracious and little transition where they're adding this, they're creating this, they're playing with this. They tried that didn't work, but now that one of the good features from that piece of software has now appeared in the next thing. It's just a question of style. Every creator has their own style and their own fingerprint, and Apple's is to we're gonna suffer in our freezing garret, close the door behind us,
right?
And you'll have the novel when we have a new novel.
Well, contrast them to Samsung, and we've talked about this before, where Apple really has a voice and a strong voice, and Samsung is quite the opposite. They say, well, we'll just throw we'll give you every size phone until we figure out which one you like the best. Both sides have an argument. I was gonna quote the, as it turns out, apocryphal Henry Ford quote. If I'd asked people what they wanted, they would have said faster horses. There's a great article from a few years ago in the Harvard Business Review in which it said, even though Henry Ford probably never said that, he certainly did not listen to what customers wanted, which was an asset early on because he could create the assembly line and make basically the same Model T for many years and get the benefit of having made that kind of inflexible assembly line. He did quite famously said the Model T comes in any color you want as long as it's black. But here's the interesting statistic from this article. I love this article. In 1921, Ford sold about 2/3 of all the cars built in the U.S. But as tastes changed, Ford was unable to, or unwilling to, or culturally unable to listen to what its customers wanted. And 5 years later, that share had gone from 2/3 to 1/3. And a year after that, 15%. So there's no right answer. And in the business study is, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. It's worked for Apple. Apple has a strong voice and knows what it wants. And yet at the same time, in fact, let's take a break. But when we come back, I want to talk about Walt Mossberg's damning of Siri. Why does Siri seem so dumb? And Apple's perhaps response by hiring a new director of artificial intelligence. And, of course, the strong rumors that Apple is no longer going to do the thing that it was strongly rumored that it was going to do. Or maybe they're not going to do it as much as they're going to do of what they thought they were going to do, but nobody ever said they were going to do, but we thought they were going to do. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Hey, it's great to have you guys. Andy Iannacco is here, and we love having him. Renee Ritchie called away. I'm speculating, given that we're close to the end of the month, called away for a briefing from somebody, and he was getting on a plane, I believe.
Okay, it could be like a watch band.
I know. Renee. For Renee, he could be flying to Toronto to get the latest Hermes watch band. We don't know. But we have, it took not one but two people to fill the fabulous shoes of Renee Ritchie. One, of course, the great Jim Dalrymple from loopinsight.com. Always great to have you. Stay tuned. Later on, Jim, I'm sure we'll recommend some heavy metal listening for you. He tells us he's listening. What, not Sabbath. What were you listening to?
Iron Maiden.
Iron Maiden to get in the mood. Yeah. I don't know why I confuse those two. Also with us from Big Nerd Ranch. Are you in Atlanta right now, Aaron?
I am in Atlanta.
Yep. If you want to learn how to write software, not just for iOS, but for Android.
We have the new web book. Hold on.
Oh, the web and Big Swift courses.
Let me get this out of this one.
Web development. There it is. Front-end web development.
Web development. This is our new book on JavaScript and CSS nice. And some HTML5 tricks.
I really love these books, by the way. I have a whole bookshelf full of Big Nerd Ranch books, thanks to you,
That's good
Aaron.
To hear.
Yeah. And maybe when we come back to, we can talk a little bit more about Swift. Swift 3.0 came out, and more and more I'm hearing from developers that this is the language they've been looking for, not even just for Apple. I'm curious about its cross-platform potential, but we'll get to that in a moment. Right now, we're talking about Squarespace, speaking of front-end web development. Now, you could get Aaron's book and become a JavaScript guru, and you could still use Squarespace, by the way, because they have a great developer platform. But also, you don't have to be, and that's the beauty of it. In fact, Squarespace, I love the advantage of Squarespace. The advantage it gives you is you get to use state-of-the-art, the latest engineering, the latest design to make your website without being a guru in JavaScript and CSS and HTML and all of that. And frankly, this makes a lot of sense. Why hire for hundreds of thousands of dollars engineers and designers to do this when Squarespace already has the best engineers, the best designers doing templates you can start with and customize and get the best of both worlds? There are dozens of templates to choose from. Every single template features really strong e-commerce. You can get grid-style landing pages, which are, you know, this is the nice thing. As fashions change, as they do every month on the web, Squarespace does new templates, and you can change with a click of a mouse to that new look. The infinite scroll, that's very big. You know, you see it on Verge and all the Vox websites, and Bloomberg just started doing that. Related posts at the bottom, encouraging visitors to explore more. This is on your site. You could actually do a magazine because they got author profile fields and integrated search field at the top. Let's readers get results quickly on any page. It will look like it's been designed by a professional, because it has been, but you get plenty, hundreds, literally hundreds of settings if you want. You can customize fonts, colors, page configurations. They have hundreds of web fonts. Regardless of your skill level, every Squarespace site looks unique. And if you want to go a step farther, you can use the developer platform or I found this really made me happy. There are Squarespace designers, developers, and setup experts you can hire. They have a whole directory of them. That's what Lisa did for artisanalagency.com when we started our new ad agency. And boy, it was very affordable. It kind of made me sad about all the amount of money we've spent over the years on web design for our pages. Every design mobile responsive. So there's no separate mobile site. Your site looks good no matter what size screen. That's the way to do it nowadays because your visitors come from all over. And when it's time, as I mentioned, to set up an online storefront, it has never been easier to sell online. In fact, it's the only website host. It's hosting and software that gives you stores that look exactly like the rest of your. It's not like something hanging off your page. It's part of your site. They also sell domain names now. If you have an idea, you've got a domain name, but you're not really ready to start developing it. 200 top-level domains, you know, .com, .net, .org, all of those, but many, 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 many more. You buy them directly from Squarespace domains, and you're going to get a spam-free, beautiful parking page that's just going to be there until you're ready to start building. Squarespace members who have built or contributed to three or more active Squarespace websites have access to Squarespace Circle. That membership includes advanced guides, optimized support, and longer trial periods for new projects, which is awesome, 6 months. I love Squarespace. It's where Leoville is, my website. Lisa, as I said, we do business on Squarespace. Our blog is there. It's really great. Start your free trial at squarespace.com. And no credit card needed, but if you decide you want to buy when the time comes, do me a favor. Use the offer code MacBreak. That way they know you heard about it on MacBreak Weekly. Squarespace. By the way, you'll get 10% off. Squarespace. A beautiful web awaits at squarespace.com. Why does Siri seem so dumb? With Google really putting the push on with its new Pixel phone and the Google Assistant, a lot of attention. Of course, Amazon with its Echo. Google's doing an Echo clone called the Hub. Even Microsoft with Cortana. It's really the battle of the virtual assistants. And I think everybody would agree that Apple is, maybe not. Let me ask, is Apple behind? Walt seems to think so.
in usability, I would say so. You have Alexa, which works really great because, kind of like what I was saying before, Amazon was so desperate slash eager to get support for the Amazon Echo. They simply said, the buffet is open. Every developer wants to create a create an action for this. Here's an API. Just go ahead and do it. So long as you don't expect to actually get money for it because we don't have a store available, but go ahead and do it. The assistant is great because it's still not released yet. It's not in final release yet, but it's the one where you don't have to form the entire action in your head first, which is what you have to do with previous generation assistants, including Siri, where you have to kind of say, schedule an appointment for tomorrow at 2:30 p.m. with so-and-so. Most of these things can do things like that, where schedule an appointment tomorrow. Great. With who? With Bob. What time? That's it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Assistant can do things like find me a place to eat near Coolidge Corner. And then, well, what kind of place you want to eat at? I don't know. Anything that's not American. It's okay. What's your price range? Well, that's nice, but can you get there by T? You have this open conversation. I don't think that Siri is not as smart necessarily as Cortana and the rest of these services. It's just that Apple hasn't really put these new sort of personalities, these new sorts of depths front and center the way that these other groups have. Also, I do think that they're kind of limiting Siri a little bit. I was disappointed that it came to the desktop, but I can't talk to Siri via keyboard. I have to use the microphone at all times. When there are times where I just simply want to schedule something or find something just by typing, or I'm on a train, I don't want to have a conversation. But not a Mexican place, because I remember I had Mexican last week and it made my tummy kind of rumbly in the messy way. Oh, no, I can't eat onions after 3 p.m. You want to have those conversations out loud. Siri is still just by voice, whereas Cortana and the assistant, Microsoft and Google seem to be finding ways to put that assistant in other places, in other contexts. So I don't think it's necessarily dumber, but I don't think that it's been showing consumer-facing evolution as fast as these other services have.
One of the problems Siri has, there's two main problems. By the way, I saw John Gruber refer to Walt Mossberg's article, and I thought John might defend Siri. In fact, he agrees. Two problems. One is that Siri doesn't work all the time. A lot of times, a surprisingly large amount of times, I get Siri saying, I'm sorry, I can't help you. I don't know what's going on. I don't get it. And then he also says, Gruber says, the big problem Apple faces with Siri, and I'd agree with this, is that when people encounter these problems, whether it's not connecting or just not understanding, they stop trying.
Yeah.
It feels like you're wasting your time, and it makes you feel silly or even foolish for having tried. I have actually raised my voice more than once and called Siri bad names more than once. Siri even has a response when you do that, which tells me a lot of other people are doing it.
I think it's a lot of about expectations, is that people think Siri is artificially intelligent and it's going to be able to answer any question you have. And if Apple had set expectations a little lower, then we wouldn't be so suddenly disappointed when it didn't do everything we dreamed it would.
Although it seems to me Siri, when it was first created before Apple bought it, did more than it even today does. The creators of Siri went on to start something called Viv, and they've just sold it to Samsung. So we, I guess, have to add Samsung to that list of companies that want to play in this field. Apple has hired from CMU Ross Salakudinov, who is apparently very well-known computer science professor, director. He will be director at Apple of artificial intelligence research and charged, according to BuzzFeed, with building a team over the next few months. He's going to remain in his post at CMU, which is a little strange. Salakudinov tweeted that he was excited about his new job, which is unusual, and posted a job listing saying, join my new team. So this isn't rumor. this is confirmed, pretty confirmed stuff. And it makes sense. Apple, I'm glad to see Apple pushing harder on this. It seems to me this is the next big thing. Well, maybe AR is, maybe VR is. We have a lot of next big things. But I think if you were to pick, and certainly this was Google's contention at their event Sundar Pichai said this is the fourth revolution of computing. First, it was personal computing. Then it was the internet. Then it was mobile computing. Now it's going to be adding machine learning to everything that we do. I think I'd have to agree with him on that. And Apple, is part of Apple's problem? I wonder, Jim, what you think about this, the fact that it's decided to become the privacy company. Does that inherently limit what it can do with Siri?
Well, I think the problem with Siri, I agreed with Walt as well, and I often disagree with Walt on his stuff. But with Siri, I agreed with him. And, you know, sometimes you ask Siri what seems like a very logical, simple question, and it comes up with the most bizarre answers. And what does that lead you to do? It leads you to just stop asking the questions. Because like you said, right, when you swear at Siri, Siri comes back with an answer. Well, if you can answer that, why didn't you answer my original question? You know, I mean, so that's over time, what it's led me to do is to just stop. And right, and so I set a timer with Siri, mostly on my watch. So when I want to burn my dinner, I can effectively burn my dinner with a timer. I play music with Siri often on my phone and my watch when I'm driving. I'll often, you know, just press Siri and say, you know, play Metallica, and it'll shuffle Metallica songs until I tell it to stop. So that part of Siri seems to work fine. Asking Siri, for sports scores or the upcoming schedule for the Boston Bruins, which is the best hockey team ever, you get results that it could be the Boston Bruins. It could be something completely unrelated to sports. It could be anything. You don't know. And it depends on how you ask the question. And we all ask questions differently. So it just led me, I'll tell you, what I started doing when I would ask Siri a question and it would come up with these bizarre answers, I would then go to Google and ask Google the same question. And more often than not, Google would have the answer.
Yeah, that's got to be a little depressing for Apple users, iPhone.
So what I started doing for a lot of it, instead of wasting my time and asking Siri, I just type it into Google.
Right.
You know, I don't think about asking Google the same way that I think about asking Siri.
Well, it's a extra step because you have to open the Google app. And
right. So I would try and ask Siri, and I would try and rephrase it. And by that time, I could have had the answer just typing it into Google. You know, if I just go to the Google webpage and type it in on my iPhone, I have the answer. So, you know, creating appointments. And, you know, Apple said in that article to Walt that they were working on ways for Siri to help you manage things on your phone. So create tasks and do all of this kind of stuff. Well, I tried that in the past. Maybe it's improved since, but that's one of the things that I stopped doing. Like, you know, set up an appointment for tomorrow at 11 a.m. For MacBreak Weekly. And then it would start asking me all these questions that I already answered, that I already told it that I wanted to do. That's and, you know, yeah, it's just, you give up on that. I'll just go to the calendar app and type it in myself. Because so, you know, while Apple says that it's working, that's where its focus is on that stuff. Well, that didn't even work out so well for me. So,
well, they can get, look, there's room to get better. And I think,
but I think the problem is there's room to get better, but they've already lost a lot of the people that would use it. So they can come out in a month and say, we fixed all of the problems. Everything is done. And this is the best, AI that has ever been made. This is it. I'll probably still just set a timer and play music from it because you know the ability for it to answer simple questions, my simple questions anyway,
Was it a mistake to put it in Sierra? Is it too early to?
I'll be honest. I don't use it in Sierra because again, if I go to Siri and I want to play a song or a band, it takes three times as long to play a song or a band in iTunes than it does just for me to open up iTunes and press play.
Right.
So
now,
because
from a developer's point of view, you know, when Amazon shipped Alexa or the Echo, there was an API almost immediately. And when Google shipped the Google Assistant, there was an API immediately. And just now, Apple is finally getting around to creating the Siri kit that's going to allow developers to extend the capabilities of it. So once again, they were willing to do it eventually when someone had twisted their arms to that point.
And also, yeah, I would point out that while it's going to be harder to do a Google Now-style product for Apple because of its unwillingness to gather data, really, it would take a huge step if it just got... if it just understood better what you're saying and responded to it more appropriately. I don't have to invade your privacy to know how to schedule an appointment for you, Jim. I just need to understand and parse that sentence better.
Well, yeah, but if you ask, you're right. But if you ask a question to Siri and change a couple of words from the way that I ask it, you could get a totally different answer.
Right.
In
which
that's case,
true of all the assistants, isn't it?
I've tried with Google in asking the exact same question.
Yeah, it's better at it.
And it parses the information a bit better. Now, will Siri get better? I have no doubt that it'll get better. But the problem is Apple puts this out there and says, you know, here it is. It's going to work. It's going to help you do all of these things. But when it doesn't, It's one of those things that could become very useful or could become a novelty.
And I'll tell you what, there is a threat to Apple in falling behind this. And I'll give you an example with the Amazon Echo. Amazon now has a unlimited music service that you can pay for that's less than Apple Music, has roughly the same guts, and integrates with the Echo beautifully. So now, in fact, I paid for it as a Prime member. It was $79 for a year, which is... A little bit more than, it's like $6.30 a month. That's considerably less.
Plus you get movies, plus you get books, plus you get delivery.
No, because you have to pay for the music additional $79. Okay.
Right.
So I'm already Prime $79, actually $99 now. And then I'm now also paying another $79 a year, but for this basically the same offering as Spotify and Apple Music. I don't know. There may be differences. It's brand new. I haven't plumbed it yet, and certainly Spotify still is kind of the king in terms of playlists and, you know, kind of intelligence and social. But there's a huge selling point on the Amazon Music, which is it works with my Echo, and as Echo it starts to work with Sonos, which is now being beta tested, will be out early next year in general. More and more, that's looking like a solution for me. Now, I know, Jim, music is your life. Is that the kind of thing that sells you on a product like the Echo? If you could have all that music, of course you own everything, so you don't really care.
I own most of my music. Yeah. But I think what sells me on these types of products is the simplicity of being able to use it. If I have to keep going back and saying, you know, no, what time is this on?
I know, it's very frustrating. And that's when you swear.
It's useless to me.
Yeah,
that's when you get a response.
Yeah.
I will say Siri works in a lot of situations and it works differently for a lot of people. And it's not that it doesn't recognize my voice. It does because it gives you feedback and shows you that it understands the question or it understands the language of the question. It doesn't understand how necessarily to parse those answers. And, you know, when you look at an assistant of any type, whether it's in your home or on your phone or on your watch, you want it to, the first time, just be able to give you an answer, not take you to a website. You know, here's the information that I found. You want it to tell you. And, you know, in Walt's example, it didn't understand who the presidential candidates were. As some kind of intelligence that's an assistant that's on your phone, you would expect it to know things like that. I expect it to know, for me, sports scores or upcoming NHL schedules. I don't want it to take me to a website to show me what the schedule is. I can just type that into Google. I want it to be able [S2] Right. [S1] To come back and tell me. And when it can't, that's a problem. So music is definitely a big thing for me. But the biggest thing is how these systems, how simple they are to use. I understand there's, and Aaron can probably speak to this, how much is going on in the background to make this simple. But as a consumer, that's what I expect. I just expect it to work. And when it doesn't, I move on.
Aaron, is this a hard computer science problem?
Oh, it's a very hard computer science problem. Whenever you deal with humans and their ideas, it's always complicated. When you open it up and say, let's talk about anything you want at all,
right,
it becomes absurd.
Yeah, the more constrained the vocabulary is, one of the reasons the Echo does well is because it's more constrained, the easier it is to be accurate. It's when, although we're starting to see early reviews now of the Pixel, Google's Pixel ships on Thursday, and a number of reviewers are now publishing their reviews as of today. And almost to a person, they say the recognition, the speech recognition was superb. This is where Google does have an advantage because they've been collecting voice samples through a variety of services, including Google Voice. And remember, they were, for a while, you could get a free
Google 411.
411 and all of that. As it turned out, they killed it and they said, we got enough samples now. Thanks. So they've really benefited from that. And apparently their speech recognition with the new Google Assistant is uncannily good. That's a big step, too. You get some validation when at least the assistant understands what you asked.
They really pay attention to the finer points, too. How should Siri or the Google Assistant say okay? It depends on with the Google Assistant, it understands that it could be saying okay for a number of different reasons. It could be saying okay, meaning that I understand your last request. Now we're going to sit down and we're going to get the data we need in order to comply with that request. There's okay, meaning that okay, I understand that you don't want to do this anymore, so I won't bother you again with this. I do find that I kind of like talking to the fake person inside Google more than I like talking to the fake person inside Apple.
Yeah.
Aaron, from a technical standpoint, is what we're asking or what I'm asking from Siri not reasonable?
No, it's totally reasonable. It just takes time, and Apple shipped this as if it was a done product, and it would have been great to let it sneak out like Google 411 and Google Voice and gather the data they needed to know what, you know, 99% of the questions were going to be. And I think then they could have done a system that took care of those 99% of the cases really well. And it would have been nice to see that. But you know how Apple is. They want to ship something that's complete and tell you that it's world-changing and flawless. And in a lot of these machine learning problem spaces, it just doesn't work very well.
Yeah.
How important is data? How important is the data that Google's collected with things like Google 411?
It's all about data. So Google is, they gather a whole lot of data and they run it against a bunch of statistical models and neural networks. And so if you ask Google, it's all about the data. And then they just throw a whole lot of computing power at it to get something useful out of that data. And they're very, very good at it, and they're very dedicated to that idea, central to what they do.
The other thing Google's doing is contextual searching. So it seems as if it's almost understanding what you're talking about and can do a follow-up. And they're really touting that as another feature, and that's something Siri does not understand. It doesn't have any memory of what you've been talking about.
Yep. Hey, can I put in a quick plug here?
Yes.
If you want to develop skills for the Echo, Big Nerd Ranch and Amazon developed a series of 4 videos on how to do that. And you can go to our website and find that. Or if you go to Amazon, it's developer.amazon.com. You can find those videos as well. And it'll walk you through how to do that.
I was very impressed by the Echo was open very early on, and Amazon supports it. It will even, you know, as a hobbyist, you can create skills and run them on this. What is the name of that server that they offer? I can't remember.
Lambda.
Lambda. And So, and what language is it? Python? Do you have to use Go? What do you?
We actually do it using Node.js. So we have people write it in JavaScript, which is
JavaScript.
You know, nearly everybody knows some JavaScript.
Yeah. And but it's a little bit structured, and it's a little for the user, the end user, it's a little frustrating because you have to enable a skill, and then you have to know this specific skill trigger to get the skill running, and then you can interact with it in a more natural way. And that's given that there are hundreds, maybe thousands of skills now, that's really not a great solution. Amazon says it's going to change that. That's going to be the key for Siri. It's going to be the key for Google. It's going to be the key for everybody. Is this ability to an SDK, a way for developers to use it, and thank goodness Apple's done that, but also the ability to integrate with other apps. All three companies, I think, want to be able, like when you say, let's make a reservation for a dinner, to be able to integrate with, say, OpenTable and do that. It's funny, Siri was able to do that before Apple bought it. Apple immediately took that out, and I don't think they've put it back yet.
Yeah,
it's frustrating.
It's a difference in philosophy. Yeah, let's not forget that one of the reasons why Palm ate the Newton Message Patch lunch was that instead of spending $1,000 for a dev kit and then proving to Apple that you had a decent Newton app to support their device, Palm just, when they shipped the Palm Pilot, here is a CD-ROM. It contains a complete development kit. With an open source compiler, by all means, please write apps for our platform. Right. There's a lot of variables to the calculus. I really think that one of the big hurdles that Apple is going to have to get over is the fact that they haven't spent a long time collecting data, not only on a specific user, but on all users and all users that may be like me, because the real sophistication starts with I want to play. Where is a good place to eat near here? And for the assistant to know that he probably doesn't want an all vegetarian, all broccoli restaurant. I'm going to find places that I think that he's going to be interested in. And then the next level of sophistication is, if I say, "What's the weather going to be like tomorrow?" Do I mean, based on my traffic habits, what I'm likely to be doing on a Wednesday, do I mean, is it going to be nice enough that I can take a bike ride? Does it mean that the weather is going to affect traffic when I try to drive an hour to get someplace? Does it mean that is the weather going to affect my ability to leave on a plane that I'm scheduled to take tomorrow? And that's the sort of stuff you only get when you've been spending a decade listening and watching to what your user is doing. That's when it stops becoming a gadget for setting a kitchen timer and finding out what the current temperature is, and turns into a point of access to every single digital thing that you have, a device that you would never want to do without for a single day.
Let's talk about cars. Mark Gurman, big scoop. How Apple scaled back its, interesting choice of terms, Titanic plan to take on Detroit. First of all, Apple never announced they were taking on Detroit. That was something people determined. Although I remember, you know, when this first came out, saying, "How are we sure they're doing this?" And it seemed like Rene Ritchie said, "Oh no, they've hired 1,000 people. We know they're doing something." But maybe more challenging than anybody imagined. According to Gurman, Apple has scaled back its automotive ambition, leading to hundreds of job cuts. The team of 1,000 people has already lost hundreds of members. And for now, no longer does Apple want to build its own car, according to people familiar with the project. I guess, according to Gurman, the decision is going to be next year whether to even move forward in this.
That must be a little bit dispiriting for the people who are working on that project, because working on a project that gets canceled, that's not news. That comes with the business. But given that for a couple of years, a lot of these people were so excited about whatever it is that Apple told them under NDA that they left really great jobs with really great companies, right? Because it really intrigued them as to not just professional opportunities, but this company will give me a chance to build something that's been in my mind for the past 5 years that Ford will never let me do. And it's not just that building a car, if that was their original plan, isn't coming to fruition. It means that for 2 years, you were off the map for your professional community. And maybe even after you're let go from this project, you're still not allowed to tell people, here's what I was working on. Here's how my skill set expanded and improved. Here's what I learned. It's one way to keep the troops motivated is when you do let your people go, by the way, I'm going to pay your way to this conference that you go to every year, and you are perfectly willing to, well, if you want to present a paper on the work you've been doing with Apple, we'll have to vet it before you say it, but we're proud of the work that you're doing. We don't know if we're going to commercialize it, but we want the world to know this work that you've been doing for us. So I'm just saying that it must be a little bit dispiriting to find yourself, you know, making one last trip to the company Apple store with your employee discount, knowing that, well, that was 2 years in which I could have been going for my real estate license, and by now I'd have my real estate license.
Gurman writes, by the end, Apple started this plan in 2014. By the end of 2015, according to his sources, the project was blighted by internal strife. Managers battled about the project's direction. It was an incredible failure of leadership, one of the people said. In early 2016, project head Steve Zadesky, who was a former Ford Motor Company engineer and early iPod designer, left Titan. He's still at Apple. He just left that project. He gave the project to Dan Riccio, who was the guy already responsible for engineering iPhone, iPad, and Mac refreshes. Bob Mansfield, who had, you know, kind of been on a hiatus, returned to lead the team in April. About a month later, Gurman's got good sources, right? So I feel like he's writing this.
He's got a pretty good track record.
He's not hedging this here. About a month later, that would be in May, Mansfield took the stage in an auditorium packed with hundreds of Titan employees to announce the strategy shift. According to people who attended the meeting, Mansfield explained he had examined the project and determined Apple should move from building an outright competitor to Tesla to an underlying self-driving platform. In the following months, engineers started leaving. And, of course, we mentioned this when we reported that story, that one of the things Elon Musk always said at Tesla is you need to have the hardware and the software. You can't develop them independently. But maybe Apple saw an opportunity with some other companies like BMW or Mercedes to do the software while the car company still made the cars. More than 120 software engineers working on a car operating system and testing procedures were cut. Several hundred hardware engineers working on car chassis, suspensions, and undercarriages also left. And in September, the Times reported Apple had cut dozens of employees from Titan. John Wright, a veteran Apple manager who led the software teams, has left the project. Dan Dodge, you may remember him. He was the creator of QNX, took a larger role. So they're still working, according to Gurman, on the remaining engineers anyway, on autonomous programs, vision sensors, and simulators for testing the platform in real-world environments. And, of course, they have regulatory specialists because you've got to get regulatory approval.
All right, can I say how disappointing this is for me?
Why?
I mean, it's so cool when a company that has tens of billions of dollars sitting in the bank goes and does something audacious like building a new car company. And I was really looking forward to seeing what they would do. And I hope that they are taking their tens of billions and, you know, solving death or something like that. But it's disappointing to see that they're now just doing another, I don't know, more than a car entertainment system, but not a full car by any stretch.
Well, even if they never got to a car, the research that they had done and things like fingerprint sensor in a car and autonomy and stuff, we'd be great to get that out to the rest of the world. I mean, a lot of good work's been done here. And maybe even if they wanted to pursue that, there would be some play for them in patents and licensing. I'm not sure exactly what happens going forward.
That's what I was thinking too. Wouldn't it be interesting if part of what Apple turns out to be doing in 10 years is not just designing and shipping wonderful products, but also we're developing core technologies resting on our comfortable feather bed of $200 billion in which we can do whatever we want. And then so when someone who is better prepared to build an autonomous car wants to get started, they'll find that Apple has already done 45% of the work for them, just license the technology and then build this thing that they couldn't figure out how to build on their own. That'd be an interesting direction for the company.
Jim, you were going to say something?
Well, it's interesting that Apple, we know that Apple was doing something. And I don't think that this is over yet. You know, to Aaron's point, to have a company like Apple with billions of dollars to spend on research, they were going at this huge problem all at once. And, you know, maybe this is the point where Bob Mansfield, who I trust with, you know, all of the products that he's been in charge of at Apple over the years, maybe they just decided to focus on getting one part of this done at a time. I don't think this is something that Apple's going to come out with in the next year. I don't think it ever was. We're looking at years of work ahead of them in order to make this work. And, you know, while they were building the iPhone and the iPad at Apple, they were releasing, what was that, a Sony Ericsson phone that that they worked on with Sony to make that Motorola, work in iTunes.
And Motorola Rocker. Yeah.
The Rocker. Yeah.
Oh, the Rocker. Yeah. You know, so they could be working with car companies to integrate some of their software while at the same time working on a vehicle of their own. I would be surprised if this was the total end of everything. I think that they did need some focus though, because, you know, there was a lot of rumors of strife within the teams in which direction they should go. So I would hope that they would get something really good in software and the sensors. I mean, like Aaron's, you know, it's difficult to take a project like this and say, okay, we have the software, but you need the sensors and you need all of these things that work with the software in order to make it work properly. And, you know, Elon knows that better than anybody. And even they're having a lot of problems.
Yep.
So I really think that Apple's trying to focus. And when Apple focuses, that's when they do their best work. When they're scattered and you know, they're trying to solve too many problems all at once, you end up with Apple Music.
I agree. I think stick to your knitting. It wouldn't be as big a deal if everything was working wonderfully in the Apple universe, but it's not. And Aaron, you shouldn't be sad because that's the nature of moonshots, right? I mean, at least be happy that Apple's willing to take some of that money and do something crazy like this for a few years. But the nature of moonshots is most of them fail, right? And I think Apple's to be praised if they are cutting the cord on this one to at least being decisive about it. The worst thing would be to let this to dribble on for decades and never.
Also think about all the probably four times as fantastic projects Apple is working on that they've managed to maintain security on because they have not hired 1,000 people.
Right.
They have not.
Right.
They've not pulled some very high profile people out
right.
of office. Right.
Right.
So it's if there's a sentient, self-aware mechanical octopus that can make a really good cheese omelet for you automatically, it's probably in some subterranean Apple kitchen
somewhere
right now. And that's the sort of thing that will cause people to never say Apple can't innovate or Apple is not. Apple is only focusing on deciding what the corner radius is going to be of the next phone instead of coming up with something that really blows our minds.
Evan Stone, who's our local Swift developer, I see has stopped by the studio. I'm sure he's dying for me to ask you about Swift. We'll do that in a little bit, Aaron. I do want to talk about Apple moving, more Apple Music stories, because Jim's Dalrymple's here. We got to talk about Apple Music. And a whole lot more still to come. Our show today brought to you by Audible.com, a great source for your favorite audio books. I'm an Audible fanatic. I know Andy Anatko also is. How would you like Ron Swanson to be reading your next Audible book to you? Andy says he's got a great pick. Tom Sawyer, read by Nick Offerman. That sounds amazing. This is
Tom Sawyer. It's never occurred to me the past 10 years to read Tom Sawyer again. All I had to do was see Tom Sawyer's narrated by Nick Offerman, and my finger autonomously was clicking the buy it now button before I could even complete the thought. I definitely want to hear that.
I love Nick Offerman, and I bet this is awesome. This is actually a series Audible's been doing of classics read by well-known Hollywood names. And it's
full of guile.
There he is.
Very deep. For she wanted to trap him into damaging revealments. Like many other simple-hearted souls, it was her pet vanity to believe she was endowed with a talent for dark and mysterious diplomacy, and she loved to contemplate her most transparent devices as marvels of low cunning.
Considered to be by many to be the best American novel of all time. I'm not sure I'd agree with that, but certainly a great one. Mark Twain's Tom Sawyer. Now, you can get this for free. Or pick another book from their huge selection of not just novels, but nonfiction, science fiction, periodicals, performances, plays, even college courses. They have the great courses. If there were no other reason to get Audible, like if it were just that you could subscribe and get the great courses, that would be enough for me. I love these college courses from the best professors. I mean, you just really can grow your brain, entertain. If you're traveling, I wouldn't dare. Oh, look, a new American satire. What is it? Bob Honey, Who Just Do Stuff? Narrated by Sean Penn. Oh, yeah, I saw his interview with, who was it? With Colbert about this or somebody. Yeah. Anyway, here's the deal. Go to audible.com/MacBreak. You'll be signing up when you do that. You'll be signing up. Don't be scared for the gold account. That's really the best because the subscription gets you a book a month or a credit a month at the best price. And it's really nice to get a new book every month. I've been doing that for, since 2000, 16 years. So I have a really nice library now of Audible titles. It's a wonderful thing to do. You don't pay anything for the first month. You also get the Daily Digest of the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times as part of your subscription. Cancel in the first 30 days. You'll pay nothing. The book, though, that you choose right now will be yours to keep forever. For in the gym, on the commute, walking the dog, doing the dishes. If you have an Amazon Echo, Audible's so great. You just tell the Echo, read to me, and it'll read you exactly where you left off on your current book, which is fantastic. Audible.com/MacBreak. Audible.com/MacBreak. Your first book is yours right now for free. This was a little disheartening. Apple moves $9 billion worth of iTunes intellectual property to Ireland. Despite the complaints people are making about Apple's tax strategy, which we should hasten to point out is not illegal, but the way they do it is they move intellectual property to Ireland, and they are not stopping. Actually, those $9 billion in assets were in Luxembourg, so it doesn't really matter, although I imagine it's for tax reasons. What can you say? So, Jim, are you still unhappy with Apple Music?
A lot of things about Apple Music are getting a lot better. I do enjoy. I listen to the hard rock channel in Apple Music quite a bit.
Is it like radio, kind of?
It's kind of like radio, but it's more. It's not just an algorithm. So, you know, Apple spends time curating the station with songs, but it is very random in the type of things that it can come up with. So in hard rock radio, for instance, you could hear an old Black Sabbath song, and the next song could be a brand new song that just came out this week. So you get a nice mix. And they're doing a good job in like the A-list. The A-list is a cross genre, so you get A-list blues, or A-list hard rock. I listen to both of those, and that is a list that Apple editors came up with, and it's the best songs that are out right now. So if you want to know what songs are Apple thinks are the best right now. Go to the A-list and you'll hear them. There's, you know, 20 or 30 songs in these lists, and they're constantly being updated. It's a great thing. I do really enjoy those types of things. I'm still personally, I'm having some issues still with iTunes Match.
Really?
Yeah. Well,
it hasn't deleted more music, I hope.
No, nothing like that. I really enjoy when you go to Apple Music and you press on a band, if you scroll to the bottom of an album, it'll come up and say, here are some more bands that you may enjoy. Right. Here are some more albums and songs from this current band. I really enjoy that. But I own so much music that when Apple Music doesn't actually recognize all of the songs on the albums that I have, in which case that feature doesn't show up. And that affects things like play count, you know, the history. Apple in iOS doesn't show you the history anymore. Apple Music will only show you play counts for songs that it knows you have in your library. So that doesn't work right anymore. So there are some things with iTunes Match that I hope that they'll get fixed over the next little while. But they are doing a really good job of the playlists that they have, the radio, like hard rock and blues radio. I think that the songs that they're picking are a lot better than what they used to be. The algorithmic things it's good. Like if you pick a song and say start a station from this song, the algorithmic choices will span, you know, decades of music, which is one way that you can look at doing music. So if you pick Sweet Child of Mine and say start a station, you could get some old Black Sabbath, you could get some new stuff, you could get things from the 80s and 90s where that was, you know, that song was popular. In comparison, if you do Pandora and you choose Sweet Child of Mine, it will stay within, you know, a few years of that song.
Oh, that's interesting.
And try and give you songs. You know, it may think that Sweet Child of Mine is hair metal. So it'll give you, you know, more hair metal songs and just, you know, rock you out to that stuff, which in some circumstances is exactly what you want. So Apple and Pandora just took different approaches to the algorithmic song choices.
It's pretty clear now that music subscription services are the selection has become commoditized. They're all roughly the same. I mean, I suppose, you know, Apple has Beatles and some, but I mean, they're roughly the same. That the real distinguishing factor, and Jimmy Iovine identified this right away. He said curated lists. I think of Discover Weekly on Spotify, which is really, there's no parallel. Maybe A-list on Apple Music is similar. And then the ability to create generated radio stations. These are the things that are going to distinguish one service from another, right? The quality that you get from that, the satisfaction you get.
Right. I mean, you know, when you look at the Discover list from Spotify or Thumbprint Radio from Pandora, those and you know, Apple now has My Favorites and New Music. So these are based on, all of these are based on songs that you previously love.
Right. Songs
that
other stuff you might like.
Right. Yeah. Songs that you've previously listened to. And, you know, there are things in all three of those that I just don't get. You know, for instance, this week on Apple's, what is it? The new music list, Apple's new music list. I got some electronica and I got, you know, some pop songs, which makes no sense with my Metallica and Aussie library that I would
If you thumbed down that or skipped that, would it then maybe get smarter about that?
Well, it does seem to. But one thing, and again, this is something that I don't like about Apple Music. You can thumbs down an album, like in the new album, here are some new albums that you may like. I had one that was rap. And, you know, I respect the music and the talent of those people. But, you know, as a music lover myself, it's not the type of music I want in my library. So I would thumbs down or dislike that album, and it would stay there. And it stays there for a week or more. Yeah. I don't know why Apple, if I thumbs down or dislike that album, why can't it just take it away?
Right.
And then it's not there anymore.
Well, you don't use that as a signal. Yeah, you should know. That's a signal now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a fine line. That may mean you just didn't like that album, but you do like rap, or
right.
Maybe you like old school hip hop, but you don't like new or whatever. But but it should learn over time what you like and don't like, I would think.
Right. And, you know, last night I went to see a concert in San Jose. I went to see the Pentatonics, which is an a cappella group.
Yeah, that really screwed you up. don't put that in you're going to get a very different collection all of a sudden.
So, you know, I love musics from a lot of different genres. Yeah, yeah. You know, I have a big classical music collection. I love it all. But in Apple Music and in Pandora and Spotify, there are certain things that I prioritize over others. And most of that is going to be for driving or for working,
right,
or when I go for my walk. You know, I want some hard rock, some AC/DC, some, you know, Metallica, things like that. That's mostly what I have. And when those things learn from what I love and can distinguish my dislikes, then I think it's working great. Apple is doing a much better job of that recently. There's still problems, and, you know, I assume that they're working on them. I hope that they get the iTunes Match things worked out.
One of the challenges is not only is it hard to figure out what to recommend based on what somebody's listening to, but there are different kinds of listeners. You're a very serious music listener, musician yourself, with very strong tastes. I would guess that, you know, while wanting to please that group, that's a small group compared to the massive people who are more like me, who just say, you know, give me a playlist of stuff that is good and I like it. I don't really know what I want.
Yeah.
And they have to, it has to work for them too. And the reason I've been thinking more about this is because of this new Amazon Music system, which doesn't have any of that information, because I'm a new subscriber and Amazon hasn't really been doing this for very long. And I notice, you know, it's a different, I'm getting different stuff back. Amazon said when they created this, that the number one Amazon Echo command was, I want to listen to some music, not a particular playlist, not a particular band, just play me some music.
Hmm.
And when I read that, I started asking for that. And it's clearly basing its play. It says, here's something you might like. And then this morning, Bruce Springsteen Radio, clearly basing that on something I'd listened to in the past. And then it did a fairly decent job with some eclectic stuff, but mostly, you know, very mainstream hits, not just from Springsteen, but related bands. It was a lot like what you'd get from Pandora. I didn't listen to it. That's the other thing. Pandora degenerates over time. And I'm not sure. I didn't listen to it long enough to actually see it, because as it starts to stretch, for instance, Pandora almost always throws a Beatles song in there eventually. It's just a matter of listening long enough, and you will get a Beatles song. So it's and of course, the other thing that a lot of these systems have trouble with is classical music. I like to listen to various genres of classical music, and that I've never said play me some music or listen to Discover Weekly and gotten any classical music, and yet I listen to a lot of classical music on those services. So they're clearly ignoring that completely.
I think a lot of it is how you actually interact with the service and with particular songs. So I'm very I will like and dislike songs as I hear them on Pandora.
You have to actively curate it, don't you? Yeah.
Right. So these services are looking to you as a listener to help them create better music for you. And you know, I'm very staunch a supporter of going through and liking songs. And I do it all the time, no matter which service I'm using. So, you know, and that gives me in my... for instance, in my favorites list, which is something that comes out in Apple Music every week, I think it's updated on Wednesdays. My favorites list includes some Black Sabbath. It includes Beatles, It includes, you know, stuff like the weight from the band. You know, it includes all of Cat Stevens. You know, my list is so good as a playlist. I can be rolling down the street and listening to Cat Stevens, and the next song is from Metallica, and the next song is from the Beatles, and then Ozzy. And, you know, it's just this great list.
Does it do that, though? Does Apple smart enough to say, oh, wow, I'm going to make a list like that?
Yes. Yeah, it
does. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, they have two lists that came out maybe a month or so ago. One is called the New Music Playlist, which is based on songs that these are all new songs, but it's based on your listening habits.
Well, that's so great. If it could do
loved,
that. Yeah.
If you love a whole bunch of metal, it's going to give you a whole bunch of new metal.
Right.
If you like pop, it'll give you a bunch of new pop.
But it's not going to mix some Cat Stevens in there.
No, but then they have another one, another playlist. That's just for new music. But then it has another playlist called Your Favorites. And it will recommend songs that are your favorite songs or bands that you have loved. So mine is like old hard rock, you know, classic rock type stuff. There's a lot of that in there. And they nail that playlist every week.
That's cool.
It is really good.
That's what I'm looking for.
Right. And I just press play, and there are, you know, 30 songs in that list, and I just press play, and it just goes through these songs, and I love every one of them. So when I'm out in a walk, you know, I have every song one after another that's just really, really
good.
That's
what makes these music services sticky. Otherwise, they're completely commoditized. But when you have an experience like that, you're going to stick with that service a lot longer.
I agree.
Yeah, that's a big deal. Now, Reverb Mike in our chat room is saying, "Oh, I would never let a machine make a list. I make my own lists." Well, you can can always do that with any service. I think the real key of any of these services is that it's a lot of work to make your own playlist, and most people aren't going to do that. I mean, the days of me making a mixtape are long gone.
No, he does bring it, don't you?
I loved doing it. I mean, that's exactly right. And you can do it. I have done that with Spotify. I've made a playlist. Andy, you made a great playlist years ago when Spotify first came to the United States of the one song playlist, which I still listen to all the time.
Well, I'm totally with Jim here. I mean, there are times where I want to explore. There are times where I want to try things I never tried before. But a lot of us, I think more of us than Apple or anybody else would suspect, we have at least these two playlists that we've been curating since we've had a hard drive based player. And even those started with, again, the awesome mixtape that we used to have in our cars. And by now, I've two playlists that constitute most of my listening, and it's peppy music and it's peaceful music was the two names of the playlist. And a feature that would get my heart immediately is if I could just simply say, okay, here's the peppy playlist. It has 312 songs in it. And then say, okay, Apple Music, please up this to 350 and find 38 songs based on this playlist that you think fit with the sort of person who likes this music. And label them clearly so that they don't get mixed in with everything else I have. But let me guide you with this experience of here are the ones that keep passing the test year after year after year. This is one of the reasons why I have so much respect for the people the team that are working on Apple Music or any other music service, because no two people enjoy and explore music the same way. And then even if you have figured out how this person listens to music, figuring out what they're going to like next. There's no way to get someone to wet their pants more than simply saying, hey, recommend me an album. Like, oh, my God. I have a big enough problem where I'm doing a review of Plex, and I wish I were not worried about if I screenshot this right now, what conclusions are people going to draw about my music taste? I need to make sure it's aimed at a cool album with another cool playlist in the back of it. That's how deep the problem is.
If you want me to wet my pants, you put in a acoustic cover of a song I haven't heard before. Give me Richard Thompson doing Britney Spears' Hit Me Baby One More Time, and I acoustic, and then pants wet. This is the ad for the all new Apple Music. Show Apple title. Clearly.
And then pants wet.
And then pants wet.
Please.
clearly, Apple understands that it needs to win people over. This is what the new ad that just came out is pitching people on with Apple Music today. So there's an iPhone. You're launching the library. All your music. Oh, that's interesting. Your music as opposed to our music. And then the music you love now. This is their. So this they got from Beats, their selection of your favorite genres, which I think is way too coarse to be useful. Music you'll love next. There you go. And by the way, that's huge for the music industry, isn't it? The music industry is interested in getting you to hear new and hear and ultimately buy new music. As you know, catalog's important. But if this is going to replace radio, it needs to be a discovery tool as well. They're pushing the new music. Hear it here first. Find your favorite station live or on demand. Here's Zane. Still pushing Beats 1 with shows of the best artists and DJs. How important is that? That's something that's unique to Apple Music, is this live radio component.
It's not important to me.
Not to me either. I never listen to Beats 1.
No.
But it's because it never plays music I want. It's very club-focused.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's the whole point of Apple Music. They have to make sure that they want to make sure that you never leave the Apple logo for anything. So they have to make a music service that's going to be a good music player and organizer and playlist maker for the music that you own, a really good music store for the stuff you want to buy, a really good Spotify type thing for a subscription service, a really good Pandora type service for I'm just going to give you a starting point and keep playing stuff that I want. And then even for people who are using a satellite radio, where I don't really have any sort of attachment, emotional or monetary, to any one style or artist. I just like to have some music playing while I cook or while I clean or while I fix this car. So they couldn't have rolled out just one part of this. They really had to have a solution for everybody if they want to make sure that they're not only get the people for their first free trial, but they keep them after the free trial. Convince them that they don't have to go to the iTunes store, to the App Store, to download any other music app because, hey, our own music app comes pre-installed and it has everything you could ever want a music player to do.
Once people choose, how often is there an opportunity to steal them away? I mean, once people say, I'm a Spotify person, is there an opportunity at some point for Apple or Amazon or Google to steal them away? Or is that it? Is it done?
If Spotify starts to catch on fire in people's pockets, then that's an opportunity.
I think about toothpaste. If you say I'm a Colgate guy, that's it. There's not going to be an opportunity. Like, you're right. Unless there's a rat in your toothpaste, there's no opportunity to steal you away. That's done. Your rest of your life, right? Brands know this, by the way. That's why they try to get you young. Is there still an opportunity?
I have recused myself from this discussion.
Why is that?
Spotify is a big Nerd Ranch client. We love them.
I love Spotify. Yeah.
And I have a whole bunch of friends. They have a whole bunch of playlists, and I let them curate for me.
I'll tell you what happened to me that put me in play.
Oh.
I am in play because I was buying Spotify through Apple and paying 30% more. And I said, this is ridiculous. Why am I doing this? I'm paying $11 or whatever it was instead of, I'm paying $3 more a month. So I canceled it because the only way you can fix that, by the way, is to cancel it on iTunes, wait till it expires. Now you're on the free tier, then go to Spotify on the web and subscribe. Haven't done that part yet. So I'm in play all of a sudden. And then the Amazon Echo came, and I thought, the new Amazon Music, I thought, well, let's try that. But it was such a deal, I bought a year's worth, so maybe I'm not in play.
Yeah.
Maybe Spotify lost me.
It's weird. It's such a, again, complicated calculus. Just last week, a friend of mine on Twitter was asking me about what it was like to put all your music on Amazon Music. Because he had the exact same experience that I did after I released, fell in love with the Amazon Echo. After Amazon, I realized that for $25 a year, Amazon would give me something like a quarter of a million tracks of storage. And after about a day and a half of just uploading, just dragging something into the music app and uploading, suddenly Echo could play any album I wanted from anywhere in the house just by my barking out what I'm sort of in the mood for right now. And that doesn't mean that I've switched over to Amazon Music. I'm still using Plex as my main main local storage. I'm still using Google Music as my subscription music service. But the fact that I bought this box that does cool things when I talk at it made me buy a $25 service. Actually, you want to talk about how complicated things have gotten? This is how I buy most of my music these days.
What? That's a CD. Are you crazy?
Okay, but this is even better. This is a used CD.
Smart man.
$3 or $4. It's also I refer to it as an installation disc. This is a CD-ROM that contains the installation files for this album so that I can get it in a lossless, unencrypted, un-DRM format that I then put this into storage because after I put it into the server. And I did it because, unfortunately, Google Music and these other music services got me interested in listening to whole albums now. So now I like to buy whole albums, number one. But number two, now I don't really want to – I can't buy as much music as I want if I'm going to be spending $12, $13, $14 for the whole thing. So I'd rather buy it secondhand. And now I'm buying it in a form where they've already – the artists have already taken their cut. They've already gotten their profit from it. And the kicker is – why am I suddenly rebuying a whole bunch of Talking Heads? There's another one like on my doorstep right now. Why am I buying more Talking Heads albums? Because Documentary Now did a parody of the Stop Making Sense
documentary. The big suit movie, yeah.
And it reminded me that I only have two Talking Heads albums in my library, and I'm finally replacing stuff that I owned on cassette when I was in college and stuff.
For those of you listening and not watching, that is True Stories by Talking Heads he's holding up.
True Stories by Talking. I also have the Stop Making Sense album, the one with
I bought that movie because the movie's fascinating. Because I didn't realize this till I read David Byrne's book. It starts with an empty stage.
Yeah.
And then he comes out, and then they slowly add through the show all the pieces of the band. It's really I'd seen him before, and I don't know why I didn't notice that before. But once I read that in the book, and he talks in the book about why he did that, and then you really appreciate it. And by the end, he's in a suit that's 18 sizes too big for reasons no one understands.
He went to RISD.
That's student, all you need to know.
as performance art, decided to become a musician art as a commentary
first.
On.
Yeah. Highly recommend that movie. You recused yourself on the music thing, so I won't ask you what you use, Aaron Hellegass of Big Nerd Ranch. We'll know. I love Spotify, and I'm missing is the Discover Weekly playlist. That's what I'm missing most of all. Yeah. So it's always going to be, it's always going to be about the serendipity of discovering great new music and the playlists I can ask for. Because in fact, when I get the Pixel phone, I'll probably end up using Google Music more, Apple Music on the iPhone. Right. I mean, it seems like even the platform has a lot
to do with it. You can use Apple Music on Android, of course.
You can use it on anything, you can use Google Music on anything. Right. And you can use Amazon Music on anything, by the way. Although it works so nice. The platform seems to determine a little bit. You know, the reason you use Apple Music is because Siri knows Apple Music, right? It speaks to Apple Music. The reason you might use Google Music. Actually, I don't think that on the Pixel it's going to matter that much. I think the Pixel will be agnostic.
It shouldn't, but that is a big deal. The one problem that I was having in acquiring media was my cable cut early in the summer, and I decided that rather than reinstate certain channels, because there are just a couple of shows that I like the new season of Gold Rush, the new season of Project Runway, and I've decided that okay, I'm just going to buy the season because I'll still come out way ahead even if I'm paying $30 to own the season in HD. But then there comes a question of what format am I going to buy it in to make sure that I can play it on my Apple TV, I can play it on the Android TV, on the Roku, on my phone, on my tablet. I'm not terribly happy that I'm buying stuff from Google Play Music. excuse me, the Google Play Store. But the only reason why I'm doing that really is because the YouTube app will play all that DRM content. And that's the one thing that if you are going to tell your customers that it costs $5, it supports 8K at 60 frames per second, and it comes with 10 free years of HBO, you just don't want them to know that there is no YouTube app for it, because they're not gonna buy it if there's no YouTube app. That's the one constant across every single platform. And that's the only reason now why I have given the Play Store now $60 of my money for these two seasons, because I need the app. I need to be able to play it on different platforms. If I were 100% committed to Apple, I would feel exactly the opposite way. I would say, well, I'm going to obviously buy stuff from iTunes because it'll sync automatically to everything I have. Unlike the YouTube app, I can actually copy it onto the local file, local device storage, whereas with YouTube, I can only ever stream it. It's going to be more and more complicated until there's a great flood, a great cataclysm, and there's only one survivor, at which point they will charge 30% for everything.
You can't win, though, Andy, because I got a 4K TV, a UHD TV. And so I'd bought Goodfellas on iTunes, but of course, the Apple TV doesn't play back in UHD or 4K, so I just rebought it on Vudu. And that's the problem is, something's going to come along. It's just not digital.
Yeah,
I think you're smart to buy CDs, and I like the used, because everybody's getting rid of their CDs, so you probably can get anything you want used. That's brilliant.
Right. I've never been able to not find the CD I wanted for no more than $4.
Yep.
And I do the same thing with movies. Movies, I can I don't know what word it is that I can use that will make this completely legal. But I feel as though I have the right to transcode this.
You can transcode it, buddy.
I can transcode it, right? So now if there's something that I want to keep for my library, I can't buy four copies of it. I really can't spend there are very few movies I'm willing to spend $100 for just to have one copy that I can watch on the screen that I'm looking at. So I will buy it on Blu-ray, and then I will use an app that I've paid money for to convert it to an MP4, and then I'll put it on the server that will let me play it wherever I want. And if I could spend $5 to get that just to give it right to the studios to get that power, I would do it. If I could pay twice as much for an unlocked digital download, I would give you twice as much money for an unlocked digital download. I want to give these people my money, but if you're not going to take it and you're not going to give me a solution that I can use, I'm going to pay money for, I'm going to make sure that I've paid you for this in some way, shape or form, but then I've got to get a solution that works for me.
That's fair. I suppose it's technically illegal, but there's nobody in the world that would complain about you making digital backup copies of your physical media.
Mm. They've been arguing about that back and forth.
I know.
That is one that, for instance, a lot of this comes down to maintaining legacy stuff. For instance, when cable companies wanted to switch to digital transport, the FCC, I think it was the FCC, had to broker a deal with them where they said that because not everybody can afford DVR features, because not everybody can afford cable TV, you have to still have some sort of provision so that people can time shift programming without having to pay extra money for it. Because the Sony case basically said that it's basically a fundamental right. If I want to record it at one time and then watch it another time, that's my prerogative. If I want to record it and then keep it forever, that's my prerogative, as long as I keep control of the copy. That's why there are these mystery ports on the back of a lot of digital tuner boxes and DVRs that you don't know it, but you can plug in a USB 3 cable, you can plug in a network cable or a FireWire cable, and be able to watch this stuff without necessarily having to subscribe to a DVR plan or without necessarily having to buy or rent a set-top box in order to make it happen. So that's why there were arguments to that effect that said that all you're doing are copying it from one format to another, which is a right that you seem to have when you are ripping a CD. But there's been more expensive arguments about the Digital Millennium Copyright Act protecting the copyright holder's rights to not have their copy protected stuff copied than the right of the consumer to be able to play, convert their VHS cassettes to DVD or streaming.
Let's see. It is October. What is this? 17th?
18th.
We're getting to the end of the month. Jim, is Apple going to do an event? Have you received an invitation? What's going on?
There's still time. It's not the 31st yet. I'm not dressed up in my Halloween costume. Well, I am, but
What is your best guess as to when I presume we all agree Apple's got to have an event this month.
Well, that's the thought anyway, is that they're going to do something this month. Whether that's an event or
wouldn't be iPads, right? That's moved now to the spring, the iPad updates.
I don't think it would be iPads myself.
Yeah. So we're looking, what I'm really looking for is a new MacBook. I feel so bad. My daughter's in Mexico, called me last night. Her MacBook Pro was stolen. And I said, honey, you can't buy a new MacBook Pro right now. You must not. But she needs one. She's in college. She's in school. So what I did, don't hate me. Don't hate the player. Hate the game. I said, go down and buy a Chromebook, which she did for $179. It's doing everything she wants. She's frankly happy. It's got a Spanish language keyboard on it. And I said, and then when you come home, you know, and the new MacBooks are out, we'll get you a new MacBook. But we're in that period now where you don't want to buy a MacBook or any Mac, right?
Well, I would agree with that right now, yeah. I mean, I think we, in September, I think we all agreed that you know, Macs were coming sometime before the end of the year. It would make sense that they would have to have them out before the Black Friday shopping.
Okay.
That's November. That's November.
Yeah.
But typically they announce something and then it takes, you know, a week or two to get it into stores. So
time keeps on slipping.
Time's slipping, but you know, there is still time.
So my mother needed a new iMac, and I said, oh, a new one's about to come out. Just wait. And that was a year and a half ago.
Mother.
She's suffering.
Aaron, don't stop messing with your mother, man. That's not cool.
I mentioned that my iMac died while I was on vacation, my 2012 iMac. But I don't know if I've given you the update. It turns out there was a recall. It was one of those with the 3 terabyte Fusion drives. There was a recall. We brought it to the Mac store. They replaced it overnight at no charge.
Wow.
4-year-old iMac. But they had a recall. It was a bad hard drive. So we have now an iMac sitting on a table waiting for a home. New MacBook Pros still coming this month, according to 9to5 Mac. Actually, they're quoting Mako Takara, which I would guess is a Japanese Mac magazine. I don't know. They cite a reliable Chinese supplier. Apple plans to announce the new MacBook Pro this week as well as ship it to retailers. This would be the one with USB-C. They say it will not have a MagSafe. That's one of the things we've been wondering, is if the USB-C would be the charging port as it is on the MacBook, or if they'd still have a MagSafe. Also, of course, rumored that the MacBook Air would be gone. Thunderbolt 3 on the USB-C port would make a lot of sense. I still want to see an SD card reader in there. I hate carrying card readers with me. That's one of the reasons I like having a MacBook Pro. But I know my vote doesn't count, so.
Open your heart, Leo, and let the dongle in. The dongle has
well.
A lovely plan for your life.
Might as well. I'm all dongled up now with the iPhone 7. Also, an OLED touch bar, OLED touch bar with a new MacBook Pro, which sounds nice, as well as thinner design. Anyway, I hope they do this soon. I'll just watch for your tweet, Jim.
All right.
You're waiting for the tweet that you got the invite. So before we take a break, I want to give Aaron a chance, because Evan came in just for this, to get an update on the state of Swift. Swift 3, we liking it?
Oh, yeah. Swift 3 is great for everyone except people who write Swift books.
Is it that different?
No, it's not fundamentally different. It's very much the same, but they tidied up a lot of things. Yeah. So the community submitted over 100 proposals of how we could make Swift better. About 70 of those were modified and eventually adopted into the language.
That's
so
a lot.
A lot of the dirty corners are tidied up. And then Apple went back and changed a lot of the APIs to be consistent and clear and less verbose, just for less typing. And so really, it is a good thing. It's just it's frustrating to me that I have these two fine books.
Yeah.
and everyone is now saying the code doesn't actually compile anymore.
Oh no, is it that different? Really? So, not it's not downward or backward compatible?
Like they changed the APIs on Array, for example. So some very fundamental things are just different. So we will have new versions of the books out about in time for the new year is our goal.
There you go. Well, I look forward to that. And more and more people, you know, I was talking to Evan, who is an iOS developer who loves Swift. My general sense about Swift is that the people who are switching over to it really like it. The new iOS 10 has that great Swift playground on it on the iPad.
Yeah, Swift is a really nice language. They stole a lot of ideas from other languages that were really neat. They didn't go too far out on a limb in trying to solve all the concurrency problems that something like Elixir is trying to solve. And now they've open sourced it. So you're starting to see Swift on the server. Like IBM has their Katura project.
That's really a cool one.
Node.js, yeah. And it's using Swift instead. I think it's pretty slick. It's an exciting time to be a Swift developer.
Yeah. The Swift sandbox is at swiftlang.ng.bluemix.net. It's IBM's kind of, it's version 3, by the way, IBM's online Swift. It's not a REPL. Yeah, it's more like an IDE, right?
Yeah, but if you have an iPad, you'll just want to use Swift Playgrounds on the iPad. That's a nice way to get started. But honestly, if you're coding, you're going to want a keyboard and everything. Yeah. You might as well just get Xcode.
Yeah, Xcode 8.
And our book.
And the book. They should be a bundle. Oh, Xcode's free. Never mind.
Xcode's free. You can think of it as a bundle.
Never mind. How is it on cross-platform? Are you seeing adoption on other non-Mac platforms?
Yeah, I think we're going to. You don't see a lot of things that have been deployed yet on Linux or Swift.
It's very competitive language-wise out there. You've got all these new languages. Google has Go. Java, the folks at Mozilla now have Rust.
Rust, yeah. It's really nice. Elixir is very nifty. There's a lot going on in the languages, especially on the server right now.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
Elixir is Erlang-based, right?
That's right. It uses the same virtual machine that Erlang uses, but it's a friendlier syntax. It's a little more like Ruby.
Ah. I'll have to take a look at that. And that's fully cross-platform, or is that Mac-focused?
Yes, Elixir is totally cross-platform.
You know me. I never write anything, but I collect languages.
This is one more for your collection.
I'm always interested in a new language. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, your picks of the week, folks. Get them ready. From heavy metal to cowboy hats. But first, I want to tell you, people are asking, where'd you get that spiffy tie? You know, I got it at Trunk Club. It's one of my Trunk Club purchases. I love Trunk Club. Now, most geeks are not shoppers. Well, I take it back. Clothes shoppers. We all love going to the geek store, whether it's the hardware store or Fry's or Apple or wherever. But shopping for clothes, maybe not such a great thing. And yet, You gotta. There's times when you need to dress nice, dress for the job you want. Now, Jim Dalrymple already has the job he wants, so Jim, you don't have to pay any attention to this ad. But for those of us who, you know, I don't need to get a job anymore, but I like to get a little natty once in a while. Fall weather means not just pumpkin spice, but new clothes and layers. Maybe upgrade those sweaters, those hoodies. Maybe a bomber jacket, a Henleys, a stretch denim in your future. Before you find yourself trapped with your significant other in a store where you have to try things on, Trunk Club. Trunk Club. You just type in your measure. Go to trunkclub.com/MacBreak. You just type in your measurements, share your style and spending preferences. Then they're going to give you a stylist. Yes, a realized human who is better than your girlfriend will help you pick clothes that fit you. They will suggest items appropriate to the weather and I love my stylist. Leia she's great. From boots to ties to pants to jackets to shawl cardigans to flannel shirts, they'll select items for your trunk from over 80 top brands. You can preview it before you get it via email. Make edits, say, I like that, don't want this. Then your trunk arrives on your door. No, by the way, you've paid nothing at this point. Nothing, zero, zip, not a zilch. You have 5 days to try on the clothes. Keep what you like. Put the rest back in the trunk. Send it back. Then and only then do you pay, and you only pay for the stuff you keep. Never for shipping. Never for the stuff you send back. And by the way, I should tell you, Trunk Club is backed by Nordstrom, so you're getting great customer service, great quality, all the major brands. They even have Trunk Club clubhouses in major metros like Dallas, New York, L.A., Chicago, Charleston, Washington, D.C. So your stylist is based in one of those, so you can actually go to your Trunk Club, meet with your stylist, and they have tailors too. So for me, this is good because I can go in there. Actually, I think what they also have itinerant people, so you can go and get measured and get custom stuff too. Premium clothes, expert advice, no work, no cost to you. Here's Leia just sent me. She knows I like bow ties. Look what she sent me. It's a mustache bow tie. I can't wait to wear that. And beautiful stuff. See, these are some of the things I kept from my most recent trunk. This is a beautiful soft knit polo shirt. I just love this. It's so much easier than going to the store. Premium clothes, expert advice, no work. Trunkclub.com/MacBreak. And the best part is it's not a subscription. I want to emphasize this. You pay nothing. Your stylist will send you an email when the new season and the new stuff arrives. Leia just sent me an email and says, do you want me to do a trunk for you? And you say, no, no problem. You say, yes, you don't spend a penny except for the stuff you keep. Trunkclub.com/MacBreak for men or for women, we should emphasize. And no, you can't get this fine chapeau at the Trunk Club. they don't offer Twitch chapeaus yet. But I'm wearing a Trunk Club sweater. Beautiful. Love this sweater. Trunk Club bow tie. I love my Trunk Club. Time for our picks of the week. Let's start with you, Aaron Hillegass. What do you got for us?
So, you know, iMessage now has all these stickers and animated GIFs built in.
Oh, man.
So the new
I mocked it, by the way, when they spent an hour talking about it at the keynote, and now I can't stop using it.
But the new hipster thing to do is to make your own animated GIFs.
What?
And there is a handy tool for this. If you have a little slice of video and you want to make it get into an animated GIF so that you can share it with your friends over messaging.
Yes.
GIF Rocket.
GIF Rocket.
Pronounced GIF Rocket if you're one of those people, but I am a GIF Rocket person.
I go back and forth to drive people crazy.
it's free in their beta, so it's gifrocket.com.
Oh.
It's super easy. You just drag your video onto this dot, and it turns it into an animated GIF.
Oh, that's great.
People are very surprised when they see a personalized animated GIF appear.
And it's made in a beautiful castle in Paris.
Yes.
By Michael and Benjamin. Oh, God, I'm downloading it right now. That's cool. GIFROCKET.com, GIFROCKET.com. Great pick. Coolio. Love the free. I'm going to put the GIF Rocket. Can I just put the icon on my desktop and then I'm ready to...
And then you're set at any moment to create a new animated GIF. At any moment,
I can GIFify. Thank you, Aaron. And by the way, let me put in a plug for BigNerdRanch.com. On-site training at your site, books... Right. Anything you could imagine, but just go to BigNerdRanch.com and you can see all the stuff there. And
we develop apps and websites for people.
Nice. You do it all.
We do.
I have been a fan, and I keep saying, I know Alex Lindsay's gone and taken a class with you. This is the vacation of my dreams.
You should make that happen.
I know. I keep going to Europe and crap. Go to Big Nerd Ranch. It's the vacation of my dreams, or let the nerds come to you.
I even screwed up Hello World, so you'd have a tough time with me.
What, we can save you.
So so I could take a Swift course would be fun.
Yeah.
I know you have these great boot camps, which I think are great. And you do those not just in Atlanta, but you also do them in California, so I don't have to go that far. Also, back-end web, UX design, front-end web, iOS, Android. Oh, this is nice.
And we can do it a corporate style. If you have a bunch of friends, you want to get together and do a class, we'll send an instructor out to you.
Accelerated Coco. That's for me.
Desktop Coco. We're still doing it.
Why not? Right?
I think there's a lot of opportunity for new desktop Mac apps. I don't think of that as a dead platform at all.
Ruby on Rails, Python, advanced Python. I love Python. I don't know why I keep collecting languages when the greatest language ever has already been written, but why not? Front-end web courses.
If I'm going to do this, I want to start an advanced class.
Can we just rename it Advanced?
Is this like the gym where like they mislabel all the weights to be 50 pounds heavier than they actually are just to make you feel really good about yourself?
Strong.
That's exactly right.
I, hello world, Fu is strong.
Hi, Jim. I'm here to take objective APL for defense programmers. And yes, the intro to Python is right over there. So just follow the kids in their backpacks and
find it there. How's your tab key today? Jim Dow. Oh, by the way, I should ask you, Aaron. Tabs or spaces?
Yeah. Oh, I'm a spaces guy.
No, I am too. Because spaces renders the same everywhere. Tabs, you don't know what you're
going to get. That's exactly right. Who knows what someone has their tab sent? They'll make my code look crazy.
Crazy code.
They could have like eight spaces in a tab. What? My code would look insane.
All that indentation. Jim, your pick of the week. A
proof of high ASCII. I think that the first four bits are just good enough.
It should be emoji tabs. I want four emoji. What do you got for us, Jim?
All right. So I always do music, hard rock, metal rock type stuff. So the past couple times I've been on, I've done some really hard bluesy rock type things. People seem to enjoy those. So I'm going to do the same one, but a little bit different. So this week's pick is Zakk Wylde. Zakk was the guitar player for Ozzy Osbourne for many, many years, a lot of years. He did, God, I don't know how many albums he did with him, a lot of albums. But Zakk, while people may look and say, Ozzy's, you know, that's too hard, I don't want to listen to that. Zakk has acoustic albums. He has blues albums. Zakk did a few different bands on his own, Black Label Society.
This is the hard rock stuff. I should probably not play this, but this is his YouTube channel.
Yeah. I mean, he's got a lot of great, great stuff from acoustic all the way up to metal. So if you're looking for something that you can listen to all the time with an incredible guitarist, and I love his voice too. He's got a great voice. He does ballads on piano. He does, he's got three acoustic albums that are just basically acoustic and him. You know, and it's great stuff, really great stuff. And for if there's any guitar players out there, Zakk plays a lot in A minor pentatonic, which you will know is the blues scale.
Wow.
So a lot of his stuff is, you know, just really bluesy. Some of it is hard bluesy. Some of it is soft. It's just, it's great. Really great stuff.
Good video stuff on YouTube. And I love the idea he's got the lick of the week. I guess he stopped doing that. It would have been fun to keep doing that. It's different. Like,
well, you know, Zakk said at one point, if you're trying to learn how to play some of my songs and you can't figure them out, you're trying too hard.
It's not that complicated.
Now, that's the rhythm stuff. To be fair, Zakk is one of the best guitarists in the world.
Of course.
You know, he's
just self-deprecating.
Well, you know, some of his rhythm stuff is very easy.
Yeah.
And it's great to learn how to play that type of stuff. So I love his guitar playing. I love his songwriting. You know, Spoke in the Wheel is a song that he did years ago that is just great. But
I love it. I love the blues feel of it. That's really awesome.
Yeah.
That's really awesome.
He's just, and I, you know, I've met Zakk on many occasions, hung out with him. He's a great guy too, besides being one of the best guitar players in the world.
Z-A-K-K, or I should say Z-A-K-K, in honor of your Canadian heritage, W-Y-L-D-E.
Yeah.
.com. Thank you, Jim. And now Andy Anatko. In his beret. He's gone on us.
I felt like I needed to like sort of up my hat game, just showing up with just a a baseball cap without even any festoonery on it.
What's the button? It looks
next,
like an
optic. Next, 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 This is my Lil Cthulhu pin.
I thought it was Cthulhu here. Yeah. All right.
Given to me by Sarah Dyer and Evan Dorkin at the New York Comic Con last week.
Nice.
They have cool stuff. My pick this week is one of my favorite apps and one of my most frequently launched apps on my Mac. It's Aurora HDR 2017 for Mac. I've been using the previous version of this photo editing app for a long time. Obviously, this is the new version of it that's made it even better. When people are familiar with what HDR is, they tend to think about it, though, as, oh, well, that's the thing where I put the camera on the tripod and it takes several pictures with different exposures and then it melds them all together. Yeah, but I'm not taking landscapes. I'm not doing this. Don't think of it like that. Think of it as if you have to rename the icon, make photo better now, please, .app. That's what this app does, because HDR apps will work on single images. And if you've been looking at if you've been admiring demo pictures from the iPhone 7 Plus and all you have is an iPhone 6 Plus and you don't feel the need to upgrade right now, but you really want that better pictures, this app, if you just take any picture that you've taken with any camera, dump it in there, it will basically do a HDR process on it because there's so much color and light information in this picture that you haven't seen. Keep it on that that doggy picture for a second. This is a picture of my friend's
gorgeous,
dog.
Gorgeous.
I took that photo. Oh, God. It's a little Bernese mountain dog. Such an adorable dog. And he's just a puppy. Look at the size of his paws.
Yeah,
he's just
huge.
Growing into the paws.
Yeah.
So if you saw, I'm sorry that I didn't give you the original of this, but I shot this with my Nexus 5X that I paid $320 for, mid-range phone. And the original of this, it's really, really dark. You could see the white and the color in its markings, but that's about it. You just dump it into Aurora HDR. It will essentially, let's take the brightness down, let's take the brightness way up, and then let's combine the three versions of these. It's a lot more complicated than that behind the scenes. But as far as you know, all it did was let's find as much natural tone as we can find in this image. And then there are sliders that simply let you keep adjusting things to your liking. So even if you want to, if you think that I want there to be more blacks or I want this to be brighter, it works a little bit. Those sliders, they work a lot more like the built-in iOS Photos editor, where if you increase the brightness or increase the exposure, the software knows that you don't mean I want all the blacks to be gray and I want all the light colors to be totally washed out. It knows you mean I just want this to be a little bit brighter but still look natural. And then as you with many of these apps, and that's another one that people kept saying, oh my God, you got to pre-release like iPhone 7 Plus like a month ahead. I said, no, again, this was taken with my Nexus 5X, the $320 mid-range phone.
Wow.
And the original of this looks nothing like that. It is kind of grayish and it's kind of overcast. And it was an Aurora HDR that allowed me to fine tune this this way. I did put it into Lightroom on iOS to screw around with it a little bit more, but substantially, this was just 5 minutes of letting Aurora HDR do its thing and then making adjustments to make it look the way I wanted it to do. For instance, the first pass the app did, it's made the sky way more dramatic, but I didn't really see that there were so many different layers of clouds until I started pushing sliders around and, okay, now I can make that pop a little bit more. Now I want the greens to be a little bit more green. There's some blues in the foreground that are kind of look like just a bad color. I just want to change that color. Everybody tends to think that if you want to elevate your game, so to speak, you start to learn Photoshop and that's the app you need in order to take a good image and make it into a great image. But really this app and others like it, but this is my favorite one. It can take a JPEG from a very, very simple camera and just make it look exactly like what your eye thought it was when you were standing there looking at it. And if you start off with a great picture from the iPhone 7 Plus, it will make it even better. And once again, you don't have to, it will of course work if you're going to shoot I take pictures sometimes, of course, with my expensive Olympus camera, and I use it's on a tripod, I do actual bracketing, I do formal HDR, and there the results are absolutely spectacular. But once again, If you even just give it a JPEG from your iPhone, even better, give it a RAW file, a DNG file from your phone. It can work wonders with it. You'll be amazed at what it can do. It's like having a friend who knows Photoshop and will do everything for free without even asking for a beer or anything. Absolutely wonderful. And these results I'm showing you, by the way, it wasn't like me working for an hour and masking and doing all kinds of slick tricks. It really was, I'm just going to stare at this for about 5 minutes and just push sliders around, starting at the top of the list, going to the bottom of the list until it matches what I imagine this photo should look like. So it really has fired up my creativity, because there's nothing more disappointing than when you dump your photos and, oh, I really thought the leaves were a lot more intense. And, oh, I really thought the sky was a lot bluer. And, oh, gee, I really thought that there weren't such deep shadows on my girlfriend's face. But then you, Aurora says, oh, you're right. Hang on. Let me fix that for you. And it's done in 5 minutes.
This is from the Mac Fun folks.
Yeah.
It's M-A-C-P-H-U-N. And actually, I don't know how much Trey was involved in this, but it's kind of Trey Ratcliffe's Aurora, and I believe he was heavily involved. And of course, Trey Ratcliffe.
Yeah, and when you buy it, you also get a whole bunch of videos hosted by Trey showing you how to use the app, and also just showing how to do photography.
Right.
I love Mac Fun. They are really – they're like that band too, where no matter what album they put out, no matter how weird it seems, like, oh, it's all shopping carts and dropping melons into shopping carts instead of musical instruments – you know what? I like your other stuff so much, I'm going to buy this anyway, because I'm sure it's going to be good.
It's like Zach Wilde, you know, even an acoustic, man. So my pick of the week is really more for IT professionals, people who run large Mac shops, and it's oddly enough from Disney. Disney has open sourced a lot of the software it uses. Remember, Disney also owns Lucas ILM. And they have some really, if you go to, it's disney.github.io. And if you go take a look at some of the projects on here, there's a huge amount. For instance, Monkey, M-U-N-K-I, which is a way for OS X administrators to manage software installs over the network on client machines. They also have, for if you're an IT pro, Reposado, which lets you duplicate Mac OS X servers software update service on your own servers using Python. Anyway, just some really great stuff. And it's all open source. It's all free. I bet you if you're a graphics designer or if you're a Mac shop, what's interesting is how much of it is for the Mac. You can tell Disney's animators and others use Macintoshes quite a bit. So just check it out. It's all free. Disney.github.io. And of course, when you get there, you'll see a little come on to get a job at Disney. So maybe it's, you know, there's more there than meets the eye. We're done. Oh, I wanted to ask you one thing, Jim Dalrymple.
Shoot.
I noticed on your website, loopinsight.com, you're mentioning today the new inductees into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Just curious your take on Bob Dylan winning the Nobel Prize for Literature.
You know, I really don't know what to think about that. I mean, you know, Dylan, people have said that Dylan's a poet and he's all of this, but... you know, everybody must get stoned. And,
I know some of this stuff wasn't deep, deep.
You know, I don't know. I mean,
I like Leonard.
You know, people have even said that Dylan is a plagiarist with some of his lyrics. If you look back and some of that, I don't know. It's good. I respect Dylan. I love Dylan as a musician. But when you look at you know, literature, should Dylan be there? Even some Dylan people, even a lot of Dylan people, were really surprised that he won that.
I think even Bob is kind of wondering. He didn't mention it at his concert that night in Las Vegas.
He probably still doesn't know.
And has not responded to their invitation to come to the awards ceremony in December. He's not returning their calls.
Well, when you're Bob Dylan, you can do that.
I don't know what they're talking about, man. But I loved Leonard Cohen's line. It was the best line of all. He says, you know, you don't give Mount Everest an award for being the top highest mountain. You don't need to. So while he's saying Dylan deserves it, it's kind of like, well, does he need it? No. It's great to have you on, Jim. Thank you. Limpinsight.com for more.
Thank you.
Read him daily at J Dalrymple on the Twitter. Of course, Aaron Hillegass, we love having you on and your insight into the world of developing for Mac, BigNerdRanch.com. at Heron Hill Gas on Twitter. Great to see you in your hat. And Andy Anatko from the Chicago Sun-Times, one of my goodest friends, and a guy who comes back here every week, despite the indignities I inflict upon him.
I voluntarily changed into this hat. Any indignities I suffer, I inflict upon myself.
Go to CWOB.com or read his writing at the Chicago Sun-Times. Thank you so much for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. You may indeed join us in studio, as so many have. Just email tickets at twit.tv. We'd love to see you here, but if you can't be here in person or on the stream, on-demand audio and video is always available. Everything we do. In this case, twit.tv/MBAW. And you could subscribe there or on iTunes or on Stitcher or Slacker, whatever it is you use to listen to the shows on the internet. We will be there. Just subscribe. That way you don't miss an episode. Thanks for joining us. But now, my friends, I'm sorry to say it's time to get back to work, because break time is over.